Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another show. And today we have Jonathan. And with over 7 years of experience in brand building, content creation, and marketing and advertising, Jonathan Strupek has helped businesses and their marketing departments grow through his experience watching and playing a role in their digitally evolving world. His experience involves building brands in the startup and nonprofit space, logo design and brand strategy within esports, dropshipping, e-commerce companies, and managing multiple social media accounts, overseeing hundreds of thousands of dollars in digital advertising and numerous design video projects. Welcome to the show, Jonathan. Happy to have you here.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Great. So before we dive in and kind of talk more about where you're at today, why don't you tell us and listeners a little bit about kind of what brought you to the point? What happened in your life that made you go, I'm going to start a freelance marketing business?
Yeah. So I think it was like how everybody starts out doing something on the side for a while. And that was my thing. It was always, I've been working in, you know, like you said, marketing and advertising for many years now, full time, but it was always just that itch to do something else on the side. And so that was me doing logo design for people on the side, or, you know, helping friends and family with this. And then it turned into small businesses with that. And, you know, it got to a point in my career where I made the jump full time as soon as the past month. I've been doing freelancing for years, but for the past month, I was just, you know, at this point, I was like, okay, you have this opportunity. The fear of jumping has been holding me back for so long. And it was like, I need to finally do it and make the jump. And so I had, you know, relationships with clients and local businesses already. I didn't jump in with nothing, which I don't recommend anybody ever do. But it was, I had that little bit going and I was like, okay, I've already done this enough. I'm working an extra 3, 4, 5 hours a night after full time. Like, let's see what I can do full time. And so made the jump. And I think everybody could say that has made the jump, it's surprising how fast it grows and how much opportunity comes. And it's been great.
Yeah, I love that. That whole idea around, or the experience around feeling that fear of jumping and then jumping anyways versus just not doing it because you never really make that decision. I love that you made the decision. What was that kind of in the back of your mind for a while? Like, were you like, I want to do this full time, but I'm not because of X, Y, Z? Or was it like, were you comfortable? Like, did you have another position? Or like, how did you get to that point?
It's been a conversation I've had, you know, with myself internally, with my wife, with, you know, my dad, mentors, all these different people. I've talked about it for so long, and, you know, you talk about it enough and you're just like, okay, this has to be done. And you're always waiting for the right moment, and there never really is. And so it was me holding back. You know, we just moved. We got a bigger house. I have a toddler now. You know, I got two dogs. I got all these different financial commitments and different things. And so there's always that holding you back. Like, okay, am I going to be able to still provide and still do these things? But also it's the fear of failure. I think everybody has that same fear. Like, yeah, I make this jump and I'm only going to last a month and everyone's going to look at me weird. But also at the same time, like, people may look at you like, hey, you actually tried, whether it lasts a month, a year, the rest of your life, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to just get over it and be like, okay, you gotta try. You gotta do it.
Yeah, I love that. It was similar to what I went through I built my business for 6, maybe 9 months. And then basically just at some point along the way, I was like, okay, if I don't set a date, I'm never gonna do it. So I set a date. I set two goals, basically. One was to get to a specific amount of money, and it wasn't even that much. It was just like, okay, there's kind of the proof of concept. I can figure this out from here. And the other one was, once I hit that goal, then it was like setting a date. It was 3 months down the road. And I was like, on this date, I'm going to quit. And then that means that, okay, 6 weeks before, I'm going to put in my notice at my work. 3 months out, I'm going to tell my family, like, all these things. So like, I had an actual plan to follow to quit it. It wasn't just like this thing that was going to happen one day, even though I didn't have a plan. Right. And I'm a testament actually of having it figured, like you where you should, kind of like what you said, having it figured out before you quit. Because the business that I was running, it was just selling like info products and stuff like that, and like more like how-to books, whatever. It fell apart within a month of quitting my salary position, literally just like dropped from the sky. And that's when I got into freelancing and stuff like that, because I was like, well, I got to make money quick, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stuff you got to learn. So I imagine you, in your case, where you've been doing it for a few months, like even something as simple as like invoicing can be pretty overwhelming when you start out, right? Like mm-hmm. you need to figure out how to charge people. Is it good? Are you going to accept credit cards? How do you accept credit cards? How much do you charge? You need to do taxes. Like there's all this stuff that you would have already had of all that experience, right? And talking to clients, like a lot of that stuff you would have picked up along the years of you doing it. Now, whenever you did make that jump about a month ago, has there been, I know not much time has passed, but has anything hit you where you're like, oh, I wasn't expecting that you've had to deal with?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you just said, there's no HR department. There's no finance guy. There's no salesperson. It's all you. And you know, you put that in that plan together that yes, you're going to be the person that handles all that. But when it comes down to it, and you're the guy that has to make sure taxes are straight, you have to make sure you're setting aside enough money for taxes. How are you structuring your business? What does invoicing look like? What do all of these things entail? And it wasn't the creative, brand building, that stuff, I've been doing for 7 years that I love, that I can pick up and do whatever. It was the other side of the business world mm-hmm. that you can plan for all you want, but it's just like, you have to make sure that everything is good. You know, you have to make sure. I just recently invested in a relationship with a CPA to make mm-hmm. sure that those things are good. Cause that's one thing I don't want to worry about. And I think that the one thing that I think more people, and I was told multiple times this, is that you need to be aware of your weaknesses and where they are, and you need to find the people that are good at them, and you need to either invest in them or lean on them. You can't be the person, like I learned very quickly, I'm not going to know what my tax structure is in my state and how to do these different things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to waste my time on that, because I was spending 2 or 3 hours a day just trying to figure this out. Mm-hmm. You know, spend the time appropriately or invest in other things. You know, find the person or the mentor or whoever to help you along with that, so you can be the one that's building your business in the way you want to build it, but also have those other things taken care of. And granted, you might not be able to do that right away. No one, I couldn't, and I still can't do everything, invest in all of that, because you got to make sure you're bringing home enough money to keep things afloat. But know where your weaknesses are, acknowledge them, and then find the people or the resources that can help you fill those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. It's so true as well. And even if it's not a weakness, some things are just boring and you don't want to do, mm-hmm. right? Like I used to do SEO a lot for clients, and it's like, there's some parts of SEO that like, I'd rather just go like slam my head in the door, right? It's just tedious, it's boring, it's whatever, right? And there was that point where it's like, I didn't have the budget for it, so I would do it. And I was grateful to have the opportunity to do it. But the second I could afford to get out of that role and bring in, whether it was like a local freelancer or maybe a VA from overseas or whatever, to kind of take some of that stress off and that burden off, it wasn't really stressful, but more of a burden, a time burden, that I found that helpful. And the cool thing there is like, whenever you look at your business through the lens that you're looking at it, is you can now look at it and say, okay, where should I be spending my time? Like, is it sales? Is it marketing? Is it like delivering the best product? So mm-hmm. in your case, I know there's many different hats that you wear, especially this early in, but in mm-hmm. terms of like sales and business development, what are your thoughts on that? Like where is your focus there?
I mean, I try to, right now I'm at this point where it's a good problem, where I'm kind of at a cap of like how many client relationships I can have, which is really good. So I'm able to lean into that more of the actual product building, the creative, that side of things. But there's also this where I have to be able to make sure and lean on to the future clients and make sure that I'm still keeping those relationships alive, mm-hmm. reaching out to people constantly, making sure that I've got that, you know, appropriate amount of time allocated per week to be prospecting, to be building relationships and doing those things, because eventually those relationships are going to either dry up or someone's going to move on. That's the nature of this world, mm-hmm. but you got to make sure you constantly have, you know, a live feed of people coming through you. So it's and the part two that I have, you know, I'm only a month in, but trying to be able to balance and, you know, chunk out my time, literally chunk out, like using my Google Calendar, like, and from 9 to 11 on Tuesdays needs to be prospecting. And that's it. Like, you just need to be talking to people and doing those things. And that's the part that I have always struggled with, because in any, you know, full-time corporate America job, or even a smaller business, someone else is maybe doing that for you or telling you exactly what to do. Like, you, this is your schedule for the week. Not when you're doing this on your own, that's both a good and bad thing. It's all up on you. And that's, you got to make sure you're managing that time appropriately to make sure that you can get all of that stuff and get everything balanced out.
Yeah. One thing I've heard, the saying thrown around a lot, and there's this guy named Ryan Stuman. He has a couple podcasts. He's a really cool guy in the sales development world. And the, he has a saying, and a lot of his followers say it too, where it's like, you live and die by your calendar as an entrepreneur. And it's so true. Cause like, if we don't make time for anything that's important, it will never get prioritized. Mm-hmm. There's always something new coming down the pike that maybe it's like an urgent request or whatever it might be from a client. And without having that mechanism in place, we will forget to prospect. And then one day we will look up and we're like, oh, our revenue this month was half of what it was last month because we don't have new sales coming in and we lost a couple of clients or whatever it might look like, right? Yeah. Now, in terms of your model, I know on your website, you have a handful of different services listed, but are you looking to become kind of this all-in-one, do-it-all kind of destination for your clients? Do you kind of focus on one-off services to them? And is it retainer style or is it like one-off campaigns? Like, what does that stuff look like?
Yeah. So right now I am priding myself on being that generalist agency, generalist freelancer. Like, you can come to me and I will be able to do everything from paid search, paid social, SEO, web design. Like, my skill set, I've always said, is an inch deep and a mile wide. Mm. And I would eventually, and I think that's what I need to figure out, not only for myself, but as, you know, my freelancing and my agency grows, that what is my true bread and butter? What is my expertise? And I think that it is, I have more expertise in that paid search and paid social realm. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like my thing that I like to capitalize on and really push forward on. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the relationships that I have with clients, I have a pretty healthy balance right now of retainer versus like one-off, just I need a logo or I need a website. I have about 3 or 4 clients that are on a retainer model per month. So they have, it's just, you know, this is the amount that we worked out to charge for search, social, and everything's different. And that's the one thing too, that I'm trying to work out is, and every, you know, entrepreneur, freelancer focuses or struggles with, is pricing yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard part, is what somebody that comes to you that's this big with this much, how do you price them versus somebody who's way smaller, a mom and pop, a small shop? You know, how do you price yourself at? Retainers are bread and butter. And I know people will probably sit here and argue with me that retainers are bad, but at least right now I know that I've got 6 months worth of X amount of dollars coming in, which is good. And I can focus on those people, the focus on those clients for a long stretch of time. Versus I've got, you know, 2 logo design projects coming in right now that I need to prioritize in there. But it's been a challenge trying to struggle, not trying to struggle, to balance that out. I think retainer is the way to go. And I will argue with that because it is steady residual income that you can, and you can build these long-standing relationships with clients who then become, you know, the ones that will talk about you, who will get referrals. I've already got referrals coming in from those clients who are recommending people. Mm. You know, those relationships are king, whether you form them digitally or in person. Mm-hmm. And a retainer model is a great way to build that relationship. And so that's what I've been trying to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the cool thing about retainer is, one, obviously, like, the predictability you get as that service provider in terms of the revenue, especially as you grow and you bring on team members, you're going to need that. Otherwise, people aren't going to stick around, right? If you, mm-hmm. if you're like, hey, we may or may not eat this month, like, let's see, like, nobody wants to follow a leader like that, right? And but the other thing with retainers is that you're working with people who are committed, right? Like, the amount of people who can't afford marketing but need marketing, so they hit up marketing companies and they're like, I got $500, like, let's see what this does, right? Mm-hmm. It usually doesn't turn into anything bigger than that, right? And so I think it's a good filter just working with retainer clients, honestly. And even if it's like more of a casual one, like we used to have like SEO packages, but like we would only typically sell those to people who where we kind of saw that long-term relationship, but it was a way for them to get started without the commitment, with kind of that understanding that like, here's the next step, right? And but yeah, no, it is definitely interesting. So you say you're doing some networking. What does that look like in a kind of in today's climate?
Yeah, it's been a lot of, luckily my very first job right out of college about 7 or 8 years ago was working for my local chamber of commerce. I ran their marketing and PR. So for the first few years of my career, I was building relationships with local businesses for a while. So I kind of had that network started first, but a lot of it has been right now is, I mean, the digital networking is LinkedIn. Trying to reach out to different people there. It's been referrals from friends, family, that sort of thing. The one thing I've been experimenting with, I've been using a platform. It's called Haro. They connect Haro, you with reporters. And so I've been using that platform to kind of just get my name out there a little bit. It's not necessarily networking one-on-one with people, but it's trying to find opportunities to get out there and get your name known and get on things. But it's really just been a lot of me leaning on that existing network right now. And that's another thing that I have to put into the roadmap, into the plan, is that once the local network dries up, what's the next step? And what other platforms can you get on, and how can you become the thought leader, the expert in a topic, and have people come to you? And so that's on the map.
Awesome. And I think, just getting on a podcast like this, getting your name out there, that's a big step in that direction, right? Getting on Haro, getting published in publications, stuff like that. It's all part of the process. Now, would you, I know you talked about you have a preference, or maybe not even a preference, but just like a deeper skill set in the PPC world. Would you ever niche into a specific industry?
Well, I don't know if I would, but I think my clients are doing it for me. I've been doing a lot of stuff in the medical field, oddly enough. So the vein specialists here in my town, a local, they do like with spider veins, varicose veins. I'm working with a company out in St. Louis, the medical consultant who does second opinions and radiology. I'm slowly getting more medical related clients. But I don't know if I would niche. I think I probably should niche down into something more where I can figure out like these are the, not only am I good at PPC, but I'm good at PPC for medical, those different things. But I think that's a part of the roadmap on the journey, is figuring out, you know, what's the topic outside of, you know, marketing that that I'm really good at talking about or marketing products and services for. And that's the next step.
Yeah, I love that. That's cool. Yeah, I went a similar route where I knew about niching down. I knew it was probably going to be good, but I really held off on that for a while. And what I ended up doing was I kind of accidentally niched down my services. I started with SEO, and it was just because I bought a course on how to do local SEO, right? And it taught me how to sell it and all that. And the retainer was enough to get by on. I didn't have to do anything else, right? But as I grew, I was getting these like serious retainer clients being like, hey, we'll pay you more money if you do Google ads and remarketing and Google analytics and conversion optimization and all these other things, right? So that's when I started kind of branching out. But about probably 9 months to a year into it, I was like kind of getting my feet under me. Like I was doing okay. Like I was easily paying the bills, like whatnot. I was getting referrals coming in. I'd kind of like cracked the code, but I was still like a freelancer, right? And then I took this course. I can't remember how much it was. I think it was like $1,000 or something. And it was this guy out of Kingston, Ontario, not too far, about like an hour and a half away from where I'm at in Canada. And his name's Stuart Trier, and he's actually on YouTube. He's got really good content and hardly any views, right? Like nobody knows about this guy, except for his like circle. And he ran this 6-week coaching program. And like literally the first thing is just like, you got to niche down. Right. So that's where I niched down, and it was a train wreck at first. Cause I picked a niche. Cause like where, like I was looking at all the niches, like medical, for example, and I was like, oh, it's too competitive here. Like there's this person who's doing it. Like these guys are amazing. These ones have like 300 testimonials. Like, so I was like, oh, I'll go pick this niche with like three players in it, right? Yeah. And the reason there's three players is because there's no money in the niche, right? And so, I went through that, kind of learned how to build that specific brand, that niche brand, stand out in a market. And I did make it work to some extent, but there's a definite cap there. And then I pivoted to medical. And that's when I saw revenue really go up. There is a ton of money in medical. They know they need the marketing, and they've done it before. Like, I don't think, except for with the exception of one practice where she opened her, literally her first dental practice, I don't think I ever worked with somebody where I was the first person they were hiring, right? So like, mm-hmm. we were already coming with people to us with this history, right? And it was almost easier to please them because they had typically had experiences they weren't satisfied with, even in some cases where like the results were fine, but maybe the results weren't actually communicated well, right? Like mm-hmm. I had one client where we took them on and they were just like complaining about everything about the previous people, right? And we're looking at the results and we're like, no, they actually did well, but they were just like non-communicative. They wouldn't send reports in on time. They wouldn't answer questions. They would let emails fall through the cracks. So it's like, it's interesting the amount of things that can go wrong. Sometimes it's the easiest things. How do you stay on top of all the different things you need to do to get results for and also manage your client's expectations and the relationship in general?
It's a lot of, I mean, it's live and die by the calendar. It's a lot of, you know, Mondays is report Monday morning, Monday AM, pull your reports, get things done. Using a taskless service like Asana is what we use internally. Mm-hmm. So just keeping like set up repeating tasks, make sure things don't fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. Trying to get and set up, whether it's weekly, monthly, every client is going to prefer something different to be communicated. Mm-hmm. Some people are like, just talk to me at the end of the month, do your thing, I don't care. And others are going to be like, let me get in the weeds with you and show me what's going on. And so making sure that you find out what that client wants and what that client needs to be communicated with and tailor your communication plan with them. Mm-hmm. Because however you want to do it may not be how they want to do it. You know, every mm-hmm. client is your boss. You may be your boss, but your clients are really your boss.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure you keep them pleased and talk through things with them and set that up. Set those expectations up with your entire team. If you have a team of people helping you, like make sure they know and understand like, hey, if this client doesn't have their reports by Monday at 10 a.m., there's going to be a problem because they love to dive in and sit down over lunch and make sure they have it ready to go. Like that's what they need versus somebody who's wants it at the end of the month. Like we need to have a full pitch deck of information ready for them on how their whole month went. Make sure we've got that all clean and polished up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just making sure that you manage all of those expectations and try to keep organized. And that's another area too, where I'm kind of on, you know, you try to keep things straight and you've got clients knocking at your door throughout the day. Like I need this, I need that. Manage those expectations and communication. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, it definitely, it's almost a part-time job just managing all the emails that you'll get once you start selling marketing services. A big turning point I had there was when I cornered this guy who'd been like in the game for like 5 years. And I think I was in for like 3-4 months at the time. And I basically told him like, hey, I'm going to work for you for free for 10 hours a week. And you're going to tell me all your trade secrets. Right. And he's a super successful guy. And so anyways, the one thing he taught me is like, you need SOPs. Right. And it's like that, like I knew I needed SOPs and like, I understood it, but he taught me this concept where there's like almost two tiers of SOPs. So like you need the SOP checklist to manage all the things you have to do in a certain project. And then you can actually keep like a bird's eye view on it, kind of like what a checklist in Asana might look like, right? But then you actually have the SOP that's going into the detail, right? And all I would ever do is I would only go into the ones with the detail. I never had the checklist that was like, do this SOP first, then this SOP, then this SOP. And it basically turned into this Google Drive that was just a dump of all these lost SOPs that would never get opened more than like 2 or 3 times. Another big thing that helped me out was Asana. We use Asana internally in our software company. I used it when I ran an agency. I love it. That and Trello, if I need something quick, but Asana is like, if I need anything meaningful, I use Asana. Mm-hmm. And when I had the local SEO clients, for example, I just had a CSV upload that I could just upload. It would automatically create the task. I don't even know if they have that feature still. I'm sure they do. But you used to be able to just like upload a CSV sheet and it would just dump all these tasks and stuff like that. It would just launch the project for me, right? Are you using like templates to get ahead and stuff like that? Like you did mention repeating tasks. Like what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, so speaking of SOPs, we've been trying to build our own library of those, trying to get that kind of process together. But there is some things that, you know, you can cookie cut a little bit between clients, whether when you're starting up like a brand new PPC campaign or you're scaling up new ads, different things. There's some stuff that you can, that we have been able to cookie cut over. But also you want to be careful that, you know, you have a, people will very quickly discover that you may have a standard look and feel, you know, if they know that, you know, Strupec is running the ads for X, Y, and Z company, and they all look the same and they all talk the same and act the same, that's going to get out, and people aren't dumb. They're going to figure that stuff out. So make sure that you give them that custom love here and there. But yeah, it's been, again, only being that month in, there's a lot of stuff that we're trying to get through and figure out. And it's stuff that you can plan for as much as you want. But again, once it gets down into the moment, your process is going to change. Things are going to happen. You know, not every client is built the same. And so it's having that adaptability and flexibility to be able to quickly shift. When, you know, a client may say they needed this, and you get in, you open it up, and you're like, oh, what the heck is this? And now you've got to shift and do different things. So I think that flexibility is super important.
Yeah, I love that. And that's one thing I think is missed by a lot of agencies, especially in the early days, because you go online and you like start researching like client management, managing marketing client relationships and stuff like that. And the tone is typically follow a very standard, rigid process and don't let them dictate the process. And typically what that means is we're going to run a dictatorship, right? You're either going to exactly follow this. There's not going to be any like give here. And then you're going to leave and I'm going to fire you if you don't. And I think that's a very toxic way to do business, because it basically takes the power away from the people you're trying to help, right? Mm-hmm. And without also taking away from the fact that you do need some semblance of that. You need some order, and you need to be able to lead your client and show them like, hey, this, like, we know what we're doing and here's the process. But then it's also like, if they want reporting twice a month, for example, like there's a lot of people out there who'll be like, nope, absolutely not. That's not possible. Even if they're willing to pay more, like even if they like, are they a good client? Like it's interesting. So I really appreciate how flexible you sound. Now, is that something that you think you will go more rigid with that? Like, are you finding maybe headaches that are coming out of that flexibility? Or is that something where you're going to really lean into that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not going to go, you know, 100% rigid, but eventually, and there are some days where that flexibility comes back to bite you a little bit, where it's like you are being texted at, you know, 10 o'clock at night because something is not working, or you've got somebody that's asking X, Y, and Z of you when you really only outlined, you know, a certain amount of things. And you try to be nice, especially in the beginning. I think it's very important that you be flexible, that you have to be able to build that relationship with that client. Be like, hey, this person came on at whatever and did so much for me. Like, there's my very first client, like I redid their website and I'm running their social media all at the expense first of like a watch repair. Like they fixed all this, but I've done all this for them. We now have a much better longstanding relationship, which has helped with like referrals and different things. It's that flexibility is important, but also if you get that brand new client and they may be expecting that same flexibility that you've given to that one or your first client or whoever, you know, that can come back and really hurt if you don't kind of set those expectations right off the bat. Like, hey, I'll try to do my best to do this, but really this is the process we need to follow. This is what I'm working, or this is how you communicate, and this is how we do things. You know, I want to be able to sit down and have this workshop with you and talk through these ideas and hear your feedback. And I don't want to be like, I'm the marketer, I know best, listen to me, or vice versa. I'm the business owner, this is my business, only listen to me. You know, that sort of flexibility on both ends needs to be true.
Yeah, definitely. One, I don't know if I want to call this a tactic, but it was part of the process anyways that I learned quite early in, was if you flat out deny somebody out of nowhere, it's like, no, we don't do that. But then the client thought it was included. It's a real good way to kill rapport instantly. And so going into the relationship, making sure, like we would always make sure it's very clearly defined what we do and what we don't do. And some of the things that were like to us so obviously not included weren't necessarily obvious to them because they're not the expert, right? And what we would do is we would have that conversation before any money exchanged hands, knowing that there's going to be some point in the future where it comes up, right? And right. they're like, hey, can you do this thing that isn't included or is out of the scope or just isn't whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And that was always a great opportunity to show that we are flexible, but still reel them in within the parameters of the scope of the project by doing it. But yep. then assuming on what it was, right? Like if it was something crazy, we wouldn't, but most of like, I think every time actually we were able to do it, but then also come back in that same email where we said, hey, that's done. Also remind them that's actually completely outside of the scope. We won't be able to handle that sort of thing and kind of like give them that opportunity. And it's kind of like that soft stepping stone to the next conversation, which is that's outside of the scope while still having amazing rapport. Are there any things like that that you're looking at as you start kind of going towards that direction of adding a bit more maybe order into the business?
Yeah, we were keeping that in mind, but there's actually, I mean, a pretty recent scenario that happened with us where this occurred was that something that happens that's outside of scope, but can still be flexed. So we had one of our clients who we were in the process. We started with managing Google Ads, paid search, paid social, doing some very basic website management for them, which then led into the stepping stone of, hey, we do web design. Let's talk about a brand new website. Had that conversation, got the contract signed for that, which was great. Mm. We started slowly working on that. But during that process, their entire website went down. They had a huge attack. Something happened. Everything went down. We're in the back end trying to develop their new website on something completely separate. So they don't have a website right now, but we are in the process of developing them a new one. So instead of telling them, hey, we don't fix that, which was, we do have in our contract, you know, we're not a technical support company. We can't help with server management, different things. It's like, however, we are designing your new website. We have this amount. Let's just, part of the flexibility, let's accelerate the process a little bit. You need to work with us on getting this new website mock-up and development finished. So mm-hmm. then whatever happened with this previous thing that your previous company set up, let's forget about that, move past it real quick, and let's get you migrated over to us, brand new website, everything. And within 2 days, we finished their entire website and had it back up and running. So that's one of those things where we bridged it. I mean, another one is where somebody comes in and says, hey, I've got a problem with this app. And then it's just telling them, I can't fix that. Please reach out to their technical support team. We can't do that. So it's trying to figure that out. There's already something in place. Let's be flexible. Let's do this. And now it's like, okay, holy crap, this company, you know, Jonathan just built me a brand new website in less than a week. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that flexibility. And now all of a sudden, hopefully I've gotten some good rapport out of it and I can hopefully get more and a better, stronger standing relationship with them because of that.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you're doing exactly what business is designed to do, which is you're solving your customers' problems, right? Whereas mm-hmm. like, if you were just to be like, no, sorry, we don't do that. It's like, your customer might go solve the problem and in the process cut you completely out because somebody else came and solved that problem. So I love that you're able to come in there and be there for the customer. That's really great. Now, in terms of, I know you mentioned some tactics to do with growth and whatnot. What's your trajectory looking like? Are you actively building and monitoring a pipeline? Are you using a CRM? Like what are your processes around that look like?
Yeah, I'm currently trying to build out a CRM. Right now I'm trying to actually build out an automated just client management system. I've been toying with a bunch of different things, Honeybook, Dubsado, all these different things. I'm trying to build that out because again, I'm at the point where I can't take on any more clients right now, but I'm in the process of talking to some for the next month or so. So whenever I get them on, what does that automation look like? Mm. Then how does it integrate with a CRM to actually help manage that out? So like, what is utilizing HubSpot, for example, look like? I have a lot of experience with HubSpot when I worked for Beer Nuts and previous jobs. I helped them set up their CRM for them. And that was their CRM, email marketing, the works. So how can I do that? What does that look like? So that's the part where I'm at a good spot where once the growth hits, I need to have that plan ready. And I think my position is a little bit unique too, in that I probably should have had a lot of this set up when I made the jump. You know, you need to have that automation, that CRM and everything, but the relationships were there where I could at least float for this month or so. And now it's like, okay, let's get down to it and get those things figured out.
That's awesome. And that's honestly my favorite part of the business is like working on the systems that are building the business. So that's exciting that you're looking at all those things. Now, in terms of building one-to-one relationships in the next, I don't know, 6 months from now, right? What do you see yourself doing? It's like, pretend that you've completely dried up your personal network. You're going to continue to get referrals in, right? Mm-hmm. But are you going to do cold email? Are you going to do LinkedIn? What's that going to look like?
Yeah, there's some, I've gotten some luck with cold emails, like going out across the web and using like a hunter.io app, like for Chrome, and trying to get some emails from people doing that type of stuff. Trying to get my name out in thought leadership, different things, utilizing that. I think trying to get on different social media platforms is good. LinkedIn is good. TikTok is another one that I think is going to be vastly underestimated right now, and I think still is, as a growth opportunity for not only agencies themselves, but for businesses or clients that I'm helping with. Right now, I'm having those conversations with clients right now. It's like, let's find these platforms that are emerging, already emerged, or still have all these other different things, and let's try to figure out how we can get on those to grow and get word out. Because that's what us as marketers do and should be doing. We're always monitoring trends and always trying to figure out what's the next biggest, best, and brightest way to get a hold of people, get customers for our clients and for ourselves. And that's the type of things we're trying to look out for.
That's cool. Yeah, let's talk about TikTok. So that is something, I know nothing about TikTok. I've seen like the odd video with like the watermark on it and whatnot. And the way that I see it is it's just like, from what I've seen, my very limited exposure, but the opinion that I have of it is that it's more of an entertainment website. And so can you teach me like if I'm wrong and why I'm wrong and like how you could leverage that for, I don't know, say a marketing agency?
Yeah, so I think that with TikTok, there is... that algorithm is so insanely smart that you hear, you'll hear people talk all the time. And once you get down the rabbit hole that is TikTok, that, you know, oh, whenever I scroll on my For You page, they call it, you have your For You page and your following page. So who you're actually following versus your For You page, which is like, this is what TikTok thinks I love, which 90% of the time they're right. But this is the page, this is what I'm in, you know, oh, I'm stuck on, you know, dog TikTok because I only scroll past and like dog videos. You know, this is what I'm on. And so in that example, if I'm stuck on dog TikTok, if I'm say like a local pet groomer, or if I sell dog toys, cat toys, different things like that, I should be posting on TikTok organically, highlighting and showing my product off and using the relevant hashtags, just like you do with Instagram, just like you do with all these other platforms. And then I'm going to show up on dog TikTok and those people are going to come to my page, come to my profile, see that. And it's just this very organic, natural way for brands, for agencies to blend in and start driving traffic. I mean, on TikTok profiles, you can set up a brand profile. You can, once you reach a certain page on a certain amount of likes on your personal one, you can get a link on your profile page, which then can link out to say your own website or a link tree where you can, there's a lot of people that are selling, you know, courses and different things, one-on-one advice, getting people to sign up for email lists, different things. I mean, there's so much that can be done on there, and it's the algorithm, the way that it's set up. I mean, people are still trying to guess how it works, but I mean, you can go viral in an instant. It's just, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. There was on my personal profile page, I made a video about fonts, cause that's one of my weird passions, about, you know, Comic Sans and Papyrus and how much I hate it. I went viral on there and got 40,000 likes in a few hours. And then on my next one, I kept making, I was like, okay, TikTok understands my passion against fonts. Let me keep making these videos. And they kept getting huge hits. And so now it's like, okay, let's take that same principle as a business owner, as an agency. And how can we take that and translate it into leads? I mean, you see, there's a bunch of different people that are out there that have literally made livings off of selling their selves, their services as an agency just off of TikTok leads. Mm-hmm. And people are on there. My personal TikTok, it's at I am Strupec, is basically stuck on business TikTok, which people, it's a bunch of other marketing agencies or other people giving advice to other agency owners about, here's this awesome free platform. Here's these different tools that I use. And then other business owners or potential future clients may stumble upon your TikTok and be like, this guy's offering me all this free advice. Let me go through and save these TikToks. Like, okay. Then they may log on and try these free platforms that I've been recommending, like, oh, use Kamua to help you with reformatting your videos. And they may be like, I don't have time to do this. Let me reach out to Strupec, who I have liked a bunch of his TikToks, and let me see what he could do for me. Mm. And that's where that kind of delivers. And people, again, still think that TikTok, and it kind of is, it's for entertainment and dumb dances and weird trends. And that is what it is, but it's also can be utilized just the same way that Facebook and Twitter has been for growing business. It's just, as a marketer, how can you position yourself and blend in naturally and make it work?
I love that. That's really cool. And it's always interesting to see the evolution of the different social platforms and how they can be leveraged through a business lens. Like, you look at Instagram, for example, in my opinion, the pages are kind of useless, right? Like, they don't get a ton of exposure. If you're commenting on pages, you never know really who's on the other side. But on the flip side, like, you can go DM or comment on somebody who's worth like a eight-figure, like a year business or whatever, right? And pretty easily, like, they're accessible and they're active and they'll comment back and you can get comments and exposure and whatnot pretty easily, or FaceTime at least with these pretty big players that could be prospects. And same on Facebook, right? Like, Facebook's kind of a little different in the sense that, like, it's changing nowadays, but like, you don't really just send a random request, but like, if you have like shared connections and things like that, or you're in the same group or whatever, it's pretty easy to get your friends list going on that. And then, but the big advantage, in my opinion, with Facebook is groups, right? It's just like, you don't need to be friends with them to network with them. You just got to be in that same group and you can build those relationships that way. And Twitter is the same, like, there's a handful of them. Now, in the eyes of TikTok, are people going there with the objective to network? Like, I join Facebook groups all the time to network, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the same with TikTok? Or do you think it is really people are coming in for entertainment and then they're accidentally seeing the business stuff?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's accidental. I think some people are doing it on purpose. Like, for myself, I do have a personal TikTok and a business TikTok, just like how some people may have a business and personal Instagram account. For example, you can very easily switch between the two. Mm-hmm. And the algorithm then knows and understands that if I'm scrolling at 11 o'clock at night, I don't want to be looking at business tips. I want to be looking at really dumb dog videos. Mm-hmm. Like, but during the workday, I want to switch to that business account, and I want to be actively using that account to look for, you know, new clients or look for new ideas and all these different things. Now if I'm on my personal account, the one thing that you need to do, with same thing with every social media platform, is looking at what's trending. Mm-hmm. Certain sounds are trending, certain things, certain songs. Some people may be doing some, not a dance, but some sort of thing where they're pointing to different captions, and you'll see it on there. That, how can you as a business owner then capitalize on that trend, recreate it that is appropriate for your business, bring that from your personal to your business, and then translate that into something. And it's amazing. You find these, and I see them all the time, these success stories, whether it's like an apparel company, a jewelry company, somebody that just showed their awesome process on TikTok on how they like make their clothes or how they make their jewelry, and they get 50,000 likes and they sell out of their order within their whole inventory within an hour, just because the algorithm just latched onto them. Mm-hmm. And the same thing can happen with anybody at anything. It's just, you come there for one thing and holy crap, now all of a sudden I've got this coming to me. It's wild. It's absolutely wild. And so many people are still trying to figure it out, but it's one of those places that I think you really should be, both for personal and for pleasure. You don't go on there and watch some dumb things, but go on there and learn a few things here and there too.
I love that. Now I got a couple more TikTok questions, but can people reach out to you? And is that something you help on? Like, is that a service they can hire you for, is TikTok management?
Yes. Yeah, I can definitely help with that. From, I mean, the same strategies for social and for TikTok in general, I can definitely help with that.
Okay. Now I got a few more questions. So in terms of locality, so let's say it's a dentist in Toronto, or maybe even a small town. Let's use up to a small town. Let's say it's a town of like 50,000 people, right? Is that still going to be beneficial, or would you need a higher concentration of people that are going to be in that geographic area?
So I think that's the other thing that's just absolutely insane about the algorithm, is that it knows and understands your geolocation too. Like, there was where I was scrolling on my personal page one day, and the local game store down the street started a TikTok, and TikTok put it on my feed. And showed me it. I was like, what the hell, where'd this come from? And so it understands that much too. And it also, if you tie it to like you sign up with Twitter, you sign up with your phone number, it automatically links to your friends. So you'll see, like, if you're on your For You page, it'll say like your friend or your contact. So it'll show that like, these are your friends. And then the algorithm learns where you're at. And then you'll start seeing local stuff. But the reason that you're probably not seeing as many local things as you should is because so many people are not capitalizing on it. They're no dentist office is going to think about setting up a TikTok. But if you look up the Bentist on TikTok, who I think is a dentist that has over 10 million followers on TikTok, and is now, his business has exploded. He's a verified dental influencer. Like, anybody, you can take literally anything and turn it in, as long as you have the right strategies and content in place. Now with TikTok, you will see, and you have to post frequently. You have to have the same posting strategy. You have to be posting, you know, sometimes multiple times a day. But again, it doesn't have to be. The beauty of TikTok is that it's not polished. It's you sitting here like this with your phone and just spewing something out for 10-60 seconds. Doesn't matter. You can upload videos. It's not like how Vine back in the day, you had to make things right away. You can record things a week or two in advance. You know, you could hire an agency to come in and shoot a couple videos for you and do that. They have their own advertising platform too, which is also has boundless possibilities. They have their own TikTok pixel for TikTok ads, for retargeting and doing different things there. Like, there's, again, it's one of those things that just people, you don't think about it as a business owner. You don't think about it. If you're a landscaper, you know, as a TikTok, who gives a shit if I'm sitting here filming myself mowing a lawn? But people do care. They do. And they see that on TikTok, they're doing these awesome things. Like, oh, let me reach out. Let me see what's going on. Like, it's crazy.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely going to try it out. I'll go sign up for an account later this week. Now, in terms of the demographics that you're going to find on TikTok, is there something, like, is it defined or is it all over the place?
I think it's definitely all over the place. It'll skew younger. It will definitely skew younger right now. You are going to see way more people in their teens in high school. It's starting to shift older. It's getting there. You will see people who are getting a little bit, who are in that older age range. People like me in their 30s, I could say 30s, and I just turned 30 last week, so I can finally say that. But it's starting to skew a little bit older. If you're running, like, say, paid ads, you're going to probably reach the older demographics. But I mean, you can geolocate all of that different stuff to different regions. You can target by age group, all those different things. But it also, and you can, again, cleverly use that younger age demographic to get to, whether it's parents or other people, depending on what you're selling, you can see that. So if it could be as simple as some kid seeing some awesome gardener doing some crazy cool things, showing his parents, like, what, this guy's local, let's talk to him. Like, it's, you can utilize that skewed age demographic to your advantage.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. And it sounds like it's very early on in terms of how freely they give away engagement. Like, I know I got my start, the first platform I actually ever sold anything on was Instagram. And it was in 2015 when it was easy to get engagement. Like, I just had a super generic, like, like black background, yellow text, motivational quote type stuff, right? And it was just, you'd pump out two or three of those a day, you write them on Canva or whatever the app of the day was, and you're off you went, right? It took like maybe half an hour a day. And you're getting hundreds of hits. Nowadays, you try that, you'll get like 20. And now it's like, it's the video that they'll give engagement to. Like you gotta, it needs to be more substance, right? So in terms of this type of content that you're putting out, what does that need to look like today to win on TikTok and actually get that exposure?
I think it's gotta be a mix of different things. It's gotta be that very, the off the cuff, just like if you're a business owner and you're walking around your store, for example, that type of content, you gotta have a few of those. You want to also throw in some a little bit more cleanly polished things that show off. Like this was very obviously done a little bit more on the production side of things. From like the ads, from a TikTok ad standpoint, TikTok has gotten a little bit better at hiding the fact that it's an ad. I mean, you could still see sponsored, those different things. But if you create it to look like a regular old off the cuff TikTok, those type of things perform really well. But you have to have a mixed bag of things, and you have to be posting frequently. The algorithm is receptive to those who will post 2, 3, 5 times a day, but it doesn't have to be anything great either. And that's the one thing that, you know, both myself as an agency owner, and then talking to people, my clients and business owners, is that everybody wants everything to be this really dramatic, very scripted, not natural piece that they can control every aspect of. And consumers don't respond to that, and neither will the algorithm. That if you sell insurance, walk around with your phone and do some very stupid thing talking about office culture or some to introduce and talk to people, like that's what you have to do. Or jump onto a trend, some silly little dance or some silly little song thing that goes to you pointing at different things here and there on the screen, and jump on that. Don't be afraid to get on that, because people will just eat it up. And it has, I promise, it has changed lives. TikTok has changed lives going with one silly little video going viral. And other platforms have done that too. Like it just takes one. In order to get that one, you just got to throw it out. Just see what happens.
That's cool. Well, yeah, I'm definitely going to commit to it and I'll try it out. Yeah, because like even like if content's the name of the game, even like cutting up, I don't know, like clips from the podcast, for example, putting that on there, putting out, like I could see like one, like we sell to small businesses, we also sell to digital agencies. So I feel like appealing to a digital agency, if you did like humor-based things about the client relationship, right? Like that's always entertaining. Like things like that, it'd be interesting to try out.
Yeah, no, it's huge. A lot of the big podcasts out there are on TikTok, and they film themselves while they're recording, and they slice and dice that up. It's just those little conversations. It could be tiny little things. Just throw it out, make it happen. You got to have, it's going to stick one way or another. It'll happen.
That's cool. Awesome, man. Well, we're getting to the top of the hour, so let's start wrapping things up. But before we jump into the three final questions, is strupec.com the best place to find you online?
Yeah, strupec.com. I'm there. You can find me on, well, TikTok at I am Strupec. I'm on Facebook as well under my own. I think it's at Strupec Marketing is there, but you can email me to jonathan@strupec.com. More than happy to just chat about anything. That's where you can find me at.
Awesome, man. That's great. And so we'll wrap up three final questions. And if any of them don't apply, feel free to just say pass and we'll go on to the next one. Okay.
Sure.
So number one, what's your favorite business or marketing related book?
My favorite Jab, Jab, Right Hook by Gary Vee.
Okay.
By Gary Vaynerchuk, I should say, is my favorite. That whole mentality that he has towards marketing and offering and pitching services has been something that I've been a big resonator with me.
Awesome. I love it. Are you following any CEOs or entrepreneurs right now?
Gary Vee is a big one that I follow. Rachel Peterson, I follow her on TikTok. If you are talking about TikTok and things, follow her. She's the one that has, I think she's basically runs 2 7-figure agencies solely off of TikTok stuff. Following her, who else? Grant Cardone, a couple of the bigger guys that I've been following along with.
Awesome. I love that. Grant Cardone was the first person who found me. Once I started like Googling business related stuff, his ads hit me immediately. That's awesome. So what's your favorite business podcast?
Oh, my favorite business podcast. It would probably, the one that I am listening to is Gary V's podcast. And now the name is going to, it's the Gary V Audio Experience.
Oh, interesting.
I'm a Gary V junkie. I don't understand. I've just latched onto him forever. So always follow him on. But yeah, the Gary V Audio Experience is one that I listen to quite a bit.
Awesome, Jonathan. Well, great having you on the show. And I really enjoyed this and I learned a lot, especially about TikTok. And the links will be in the show notes if anybody wants to reach out to you.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me.